Good morning. Today is Monday, February the 18th, President's Day 2019. Joining us this morning, President of Redwood Capital Bank, so, John Dalby.
I just want you to know that
this is not
it
your
is
day.
President's Day, but it has nothing to do with bank presidents.
Oh, well, then that just sets it up very nicely for our why do they say that?
So why do they say that?
Crestfallen.
Oh.
Why do we say a disappointed person is crestfallen?
It must have to do with roosters and their little thingies on their heads falling down.
Uh-huh.
A crest, is that right?
The allusion is to cockfighting.
Okay.
A fighting cock who has won struts around with his crest red, rigid, and upright. The one that has lost scurries away with his crest drooping and wilted. Crestfallen.
Very good.
There you go. Not too shabby. So you got the new shop open now, huh?
Opened on Valentine's Day, and we're very excited about that.
And just because you didn't feel like working on a Monday, you decided not to even show up there today.
Well, in celebration, we're taking today off.
Yeah, yeah. 2 days on, three days off.
Yeah, so
two days, yeah, okay. Interesting schedule you keep there, sir. When you're selecting a new location for a bank, or for a retailer, for anything that is exposure specific, how do you make the choice? Where to go, how to go, how big, how small, how tall, how short?
Well, of course, there's a lot of subjectivity to your decision process, but I look at a number of things. So if I'm looking at putting a branch in a new community, for instance, let's take McKinleyville. So I get requests frequently to bring a branch to McKinleyville. The challenge there is I look at the overall market, and for us, we can measure the market through FDIC research.
Yeah, you can kind of pull the covers back a little bit.
Exactly.
Because of that.
And what I have available to me is what deposit dollars are in every branch, FDIC insured branch. And so I know the total number of FDIC-insured dollars that reside in branches in McKinleyville.
So it's not who the people are, it's where the deposits are made?
That is correct.
So
I don't know who is...
So if Sam banked in downtown but lived in McKinleyville, he wouldn't register.
That is correct, yeah. So it's who actually... Where your accounts are domiciled. So I then look at that and say, okay, right now there are two branches in McKinleyville. If I open one, there's three. So I take that market and I divide it by three. And then I look at that number and say, okay, can I successfully run a branch profitably in that marketplace with the number of deposits that are currently there. So that's the first litmus test, is the market big enough for me to go in? Then you look at the cultural issues. Is there a demand for my particular type of business in that marketplace? And so can I get my fair share of the market?
Now, how would you be able, John, to figure out, let's say you guys weren't in Arcata, and you're looking at McKinleyville going, okay, well, there's a certain number of people who are in banking in Arcata that might decide to bank at home rather than Arcata. Is there any way to guesstimate, or is there a population rule of thumb that kind of is a secondary measurement for you?
No, because every community is going to be different in their demographics. Now, there's probably quite a bit of McKinleyville population that banks either in Arcata or Eureka, because that's where they work. So there's always that possibility, but there's no way for me to measure it.
So that's
totally subjective.
Is it a factor? With McKinleyville having the 19 or 20,000 people somewhere in that neighborhood there, it's as big, if not larger, than, say, Fortuna as an example.
Okay. Let's look at your example. McKinleyville, somebody might be banking in Arcata. Well, I have an Arcata branch, so are they going to then close their Arcata account, open in McKinleyville, with the competition? You know, so it, all that kind of,
there'd be a little bit of cannibalization, I would suspect, would happen just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with the Henderson Center location. I'm so sure that's part of why you did it is because, I mean, if you're up to the gills,
yes,
it'd be nice to get a little relief.
Yeah, Henderson Center is a little bit of a different animal because we're not really going into a new market, being that it's only a handful of blocks from our current branch.
It's a big hand.
Yeah. the primary driver there for purchasing the Roberts Building and renovating it primarily was one, we needed space. And so most of that building is office space. We have our loan underwriters upstairs in the old warehouse, and it's a beautiful space that we've renovated. And then our loan services department and our facilities and couriers are in the first floor. Then we have the smaller space really is the branch. And the primary purpose for putting a branch in there was to take some relief or give some relief to our Eureka branch, which has an incredible amount of volume going through it.
So it had nothing to do with shipping some people out of your office area?
No.
That was kind of the rumor discussion point at the tellers.
Yeah. Yeah, if I don't like you, you're in Henderson Center.
Right. No, it was actually the inverse.
It was.
Okay. Yeah, if you liked them, they were
they were there. Yeah. So it was really hard this, last week when we had to say goodbye to some of the people that were going to Henderson Center. There were some tears shed.
Yeah, but it's not like they're that far away.
No. So we'll see them from time to time, of course. And we do have every 2 weeks a staff meeting of the entire bank. So,
oh, there you go. There you go.
At least we'll see each other on the big screen.
KINS News and Information. It's 8:19.
We know you love Easy Radio, singing out loud, really out loud, to your favorite songs. But what about when you're traveling out of the area? Easy Radio can be heard throughout the area on 910 AM and 104.1 FM in Curry and Dilnort counties. And if you're in Humboldt County, 980 AM. That's Easy Radio, 910 AM in Brookings, 104.1 FM in Dilnort and Curry County, and 980 AM in Humboldt County. Good radio is easy.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It is 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the bank.
Easy for you to
Mr.
say.
Mr. Dalby. Yeah, okay. Maybe that's another word we have to look up. Find out why we say it. Okay. Looking at the structure of a facility, whether it's a financial institution like you guys have got with the offices upstairs and stuff, or if it's retail, how do you develop the foot traffic and the pattern that you want to be most efficient? I mean, how do you define efficient movement of people through a facility?
Well, you have two different situations. One in which you build something from scratch, which gives you much more latitude than what we did, which was the remodel, since we're talking about the Henderson Center facility.
Yeah, but it was pretty cavernous, so you kind of did have a little bit of choice.
There were some distinct challenges there. One is it has pillars going down through the middle of the building, structural ones, so that means you have to build around where the pillars are. And in fact, when you go in, you'll notice that they are right in front of the teller line. So
pillar to post has a different terminology now.
Exactly.
A reference point for you, okay.
And we had a couple weight-bearing walls we couldn't move, so we had to work around those also.
Did you get rid of the conveyor belt?
The conveyor belt is gone.
No rides when Dalby's out.
So what he's talking about is When it was the Roberts Building, the back part of the facilities was receiving. There's a warehouse upstairs, and so there was actually a conveyor belt. And it worked when we purchased it, that you could actually turn on, jump on, and ride up to the top floor, or you could reverse it and send it down.
You know that Geico ad with the pig?
I think I do.
Whee!
Oh, yeah. So we...
That's no more.
That is gone.
Oh,
that is
darn.
Gone.
That
did
okay.
not survive the remodel.
The footprint for the retail space, was that a byproduct of everything else and what was left was what was left? Or did you kind of start with that and then try to figure out how best to do it?
Yeah, we structured the branch first because that had the greatest needs. Plus, there are some things in there that are very difficult to build, so they have to be in the right place. And so one was the vault. We wanted a large vault, larger than one we have in Eureka, because that one's just too small for us at this point in time. And, of course, that needs its own foundation because of the weight. So we had to tear up the existing foundation, pour another one in place, and then build the vault, and then you build the rest of the building around that.
Well, at least you weren't built on Phil.
There you go.
That would have been even more challenging.
Poor Phil.
Or Bob, or yeah. Well, when you are talking to somebody, let's say a restaurant, okay, multiple locations, same general community, do you recommend same color scheme or different color schemes?
It depends on if your first one was successful. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that would make sense.
If it's not working, try something different.
Yeah, blow it up. Do something different. Yeah, okay.
You know, for instance, I just met a restaurateur tour.
Tour.
Yeah, that one, that thing. And her restaurants are significantly different from each other. And so, yeah, they have different menus, different customer bases. I mean, it's completely different. So you really have to look at what you're trying to do. So if you're trying to emulate exactly what it is and you want people to say, oh, yes, that's Brian's place. You know, I've eaten one before. I'm going to go there. I mean, you know, you wouldn't want...
Concept of the arches.
Right. You wouldn't want In-N-Out Burger when it arrives to look different than the one that's in Windsor or wherever that is.
Rona Park. Yeah. And, yeah. Yeah. But like, for you guys, I mean, did you want, with each of the branches, are you trying to make them similar? Identical?
No,
how do you make that, call?
So our challenge was... four of our structures are completely different, so they have to be approached differently. But we do try and keep a general scheme of colors, you know, so that there is some similarity.
Continuity, yeah.
But for the most part, every branch is significantly different than the other ones.
You know, but I do notice that there is a certain neighbor that's at least located by two of them. Haven't been able to overcome that entirely, huh?
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, so with this, how do you know if it's a success or not? How do you establish those benchmarks so that you know that it's a worthwhile and either to replicate it again or to say, okay, if we ever do another one, none of this?
Our particular business is really relationships, and so it's a people business. And having a nice facility and in an appropriate location is certainly a positive, but it really boils down to what is the experience that the customer has when they come into the branch? What is the support? Things are going to go wrong, so what are you doing when there is a challenge? And how are you handling those things?
So that's not the physical.
It's really
the internal.
Yeah, you know. We're in a people business, and you need to understand what your business is. You know, like the famous one is Starbucks. Starbucks doesn't sell coffee; they sell the coffee experience.
Oh, I thought they were selling politics.
Yeah,
it's 8:30.
Decade of Difference presents the High School Innovate Business Challenge.
I'm Genevieve Regley, encouraging you to go for it and submit an idea. I didn't know if my idea would be selected, but it was, and I learned a lot about my idea and myself. It was a great experience and helped kickstart my business while still attending Ferndale High School.
Learn more at decadeofdifference.org. Deadline to enter is February 15th. Upload your idea and compete for thousands of dollars. It's the Decade of Difference. Be a part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the bank dude, John Dalby from Redwood Capital Banks in the area. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Murphy's Markets, Humble Termite Pest Control, and Redec. The concept, I think, John, of staffing is kind of a little bit about what we talked about. How do you allow each of your businesses to have its personality and yet still be an experience that is what the customer is expecting?
So the way we do it is we have very specific training for customer service. And we look at it as the thing that differentiates us from anybody else because, you know, for the most part, the products we sell are commodities. So it's very, very important.
So a restaurant could do the same thing there.
Exactly.
Food is food, but we're going to be a different experience.
So, but even we're even more of a commodity than a restaurant because, I mean, they're pretty big swings.
Yeah.
But with that
said. Well, okay, hamburger joint versus hamburger joint.
Exactly. So we have very specific training, but we make it very simple. So, you know, there are 5 points to the perfect teller contact. And so we just hammer those home. We train them so that they know how, you know, what the expectation is. And then we measure it. And we talk about it continually. I mean, there is not.
So it's kind of a top of mind as much as
over communicate, because it is who we are. I mean, that is, if you ask our employees the one thing about us, you know, about our bank, it's customer service, because that is what we talk about all the time. And that is a top of mind.
Now, is that true for the behind the scenes?
Absolutely.
As well as the frontline folks?
Because we believe that customer service is both internal and external. And so, you know, as a customer, you're familiar with external customer service, but there are a lot of people behind the scenes that have to put things in place in order for you to have that experience with the teller.
Yeah, or the cook in the back.
Yeah, exactly. All the machinery has to work. All the supplies have to be in place. The doors have to be open. The heater has to be on. You know, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, that experience, there's a lot of people involved in making sure that that experience takes place. And so we look at customer service as both internal and external, and we celebrate both.
So as you are replicating that, I know there's a tendency in many organizations that you have a dynamo, a personality, an individual, okay? You and I, if we're in the same business, everything's the same. We're going to have two different cultures because you do some things your way and I do some things my way, still within the bounds of good stuff and what people like. How do you get comfortable with that as a business operator and say, okay, you can do things a little bit different? Or do you say, you know, we want that experience to be an identical experience, by golly, and that means we're not going to be doing that.
So you have some things that are non-negotiables. This is what has to happen.
Like FDIC-related things, or are you talking about cultural things?
Things like the customer service experience, you know, that has to be there. Accuracy, that has to be there.
Another good point,
right.
Yes.
But within those boundaries, you're going to see each manager, I want them to manage based on their own personalities and their own character because, you know, each one is substantially different. And, you know, I can't expect anybody, nor would I want them to be like me. So, for instance, there are differences in our branches. Arcata, for instance, they have an oven and they make fresh cookies. And so you can actually get, you know, most of the day, a nice, warm, freshly baked cookie.
The old double tree trick, huh? Yeah.
We don't have that in any other brand.
I've noticed.
And so you're going to see differences because people's personalities are different, but the expectation of performance is the same.
So it's the 5%. Not the 95%.
Yeah, we're going to measure customer service. We're going to measure your numbers, and we're going to measure your leadership, because we actually do score leadership, and we have a whole system to do that. And so. And we outline exactly what our expectations are, and you're trained in order to meet those. Outside of those boundaries, you give them a great deal of freedom.
As long as they don't go too far on their chain. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking parking. You know, for mm-hmm. a lot of businesses, parking is a variable that can be more than a challenge. You know, if you don't have enough parking slots, it doesn't matter how good you're doing. And how much in demand, people are still going to be feeling inconvenienced if they have to walk more than 10 feet
mm-hmm.
or 15 feet. That's it. Those types of things, do those factor into some of those pro formas that you project before determining on a location?
Our customer's experience starts with the selection of a place to park. And so we don't look at it as customer service starts when you walk in the door. It is if you need to come in, you need a place to park. And so that's very important to us. In fact, we've just run into some serious problems downtown in which a number of our our neighbors have chosen to utilize our parking lot. So we've had to put a guard in there, and there are some of our neighbors are no longer very happy with us.
I thought that was a welcoming.
Yeah. But we want to make sure that when you come to the branch that you have the experience that you can pull into a parking spot and you can get into the branch very quickly, because that's where the experience begins. We also anticipate having some real challenges in Henderson Center. It's a smaller parking lot. Our employees will not be parking in it. They'll be parking elsewhere out on the streets, much like we do in Eureka. And again, we're gonna start off with a guard just to make sure that
establish good habits.
Yes, because that parking lot, to be honest, has been used for the last 10 years by anyone who wanted to pull in, and so it's been virtually a public lot for 10 years. So there's a lot of habits that have formed. So
a public lot for decades. Before the building was built on that site, too. So, there's the... Do I sound old?
Yes, you do.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more from John Dalby.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The Los Angeles flight is a great success. Did you hear? Starting May 29th, we'll have a second departure to Los Angeles. It makes it even easier to visit sunny SoCal. What's more, we'll have flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a few hours away from the Mile High City or wherever you want to go. This will make connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It is 8:47. Joining us this morning, this fine President's Day, Mr. Dalby. John, how do you determine, or how does the Fed determine, what is a day when banks can be closed or may be closed or must be closed?
Okay, we're tied to the Federal Reserve Bank. And so when the Federal Reserve closes, nothing moves. So federal holidays, the Federal Reserve Bank closes. We could choose to be open, but there's not much we can do. So be very limited on the activity of the services that we could provide on those days. So we do close for federal holidays when they fall on a weekday or on Saturday. Now, if they fall on Sunday, we're open on Monday, and so is the Federal Reserve Bank. The other restraint we have is we are not allowed to be closed 4 consecutive days in a row.
That would be consecutive days.
So It's from the Department of Redundancy Department.
You got it,
yes,
baby.
I got it. So, you know, like on Thanksgiving, it'd be really nice if we could close Friday. It is the slowest banking day of the year, but it would be illegal for us to be closed on Friday because that would then result in Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, four consecutive days we can't be closed.
So you do a skeleton crew kind of a
yes,
typically.
We're trying. And I usually always work that day so we can get more of our staff out.
As a teller?
That would be a really bad idea.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That counting thing?
Yeah, there's the accuracy thing. Yeah. 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 That would not be, it would not be pretty.
So why do some open on Saturdays? Is that just a determination if they want to?
So, yes, you can open on Saturday and Sunday if you choose.
Oh, Sunday also?
Yes.
Oh.
But the Federal Reserve is not open, so money's not moving.
So you could take deposits, and that's...
It's very limited, so if you wanted to send a wire on Saturday, they'll take your order, and they'll send it out on Monday.
So it'd be just more of the convenience
It's a convenience, yeah. Correct. Now, we have not chosen to go to Saturday hours simply because we staff differently than other institutions. We staff primarily with full-time employees. So we want full-time benefited jobs, and that's what we try and create. And by doing so, it's very challenging to add a sixth workday and schedule appropriately. Now, what the bigger institutions do is they have a lot of part-times and very few full-time positions. So most
they wouldn't stagger it like a Tuesday-Saturday work week?
Correct. And so, and the problem you have is even if you're open on Saturday, your busiest days are Friday and Monday. And so if you open on Saturday, and so if somebody's got to take a day off, you have to take it Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, so you're splitting up your days off.
Yeah, you got two ones instead of a 2 day. All right. Hopefully that's everything everybody wanted to know. If not, we've got next month.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by. That's you.
Always good to see you.
All right, there we go. Now we can say goodbye. See everybody tomorrow.